B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
And Mass.
You're not going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, so we let off the show talking about some of these return to play guidelines in Major League Baseball. 67-page document. One of the highlights you've probably heard of: no spitting, no high fives, no fist bumps. Managers, coaches wear masks in the dugout. If you're not playing, but you're sort of on the team, you have to sit in the stands. You have to spread out during the Star-Spangled Banner and God Bless America. Fielders are encouraged to retreat several steps away from the base runner between pitches. I still don't fully get what that means. So the first baseman, when he's holding on the guy at first, has to run away, has to run back in between pitches or what? I don't quite... That's not fully explained, but anyway... First and third base coaches are not to approach base runners or umpires, and players should not socialize with opponents. If the ball is touched by multiple players on a specific play, they'll take it out of play. So, like, pitch a ball into the gap where the outfielder relays it to the second baseman, who relays it to the shortstop standing on second, then to the pitcher. They take that ball out of play. So, no around the horn after a strikeout. They'll take that ball right out. Players are prohibited from taking showers after games. The big one, no spitting. No spitting sunflower seeds, no chewing tobacco, which was already a rule. But they're saying no spitting, which we all agree is like asking a baseball player not to breathe. No hugs, no high fives. And again, I've repeated some of these, but I'm just reading it. Players would go through daily temperature screenings to have to sanitize their hands each half inning. MLB plans to perform thousands of tests on players, coaches, management, and stadium personnel for COVID-19 on a weekly basis. Maz, you had a thought on that.
Well, so what I don't understand is if they're going to provide and take all these tests, why do they have to go to such extreme measures on some of the other things, like players touching the ball? So everything we've heard from medical experts is that most of the transmission of the virus, really of any illness like it, is person to person. In other words, you know, I'm sick, I sneeze, I then shake hands with you, you rub your eye. Okay, that I get. Person to person, skin to skin, I get it. Now all of a sudden, everybody's going to get tests. All these people are going to be cleared. They're going to pass the test and get on the field, and if three guys touch the ball, they have to take the ball out of play? Like, I don't get that.
Silly.
Like that, it doesn't seem to make sense to me. It feels excessive. If we're going to clear them to play, let's let them play the game. Now, certain things we got to take out. Okay, I get it. Spitting in the dugout, for example, I think is a good one. You don't want to have guys, you know, hucking loogies all over the place in there. It's just that's not smart. I get it. But out on the field, someone's going to grab the ball and throw it to the other guy, catches his glove, flips it to his hand, and throws back to the mound. We can take that ball out of play. That just feels too much to me.
Yeah, it's just kind of ridiculous. And the no spitting thing on the field, that's like telling those guys not to breathe. It's just it's ingrained. I don't think you can turn it off. So maybe this is just lip service to the health officials. See, like, hey, see, this is what we're going to do here. And then when they get out there, it's like, okay, like, I mean, we're going to play within the rules here, these new rules, and we'll be safe. But like some of this other stuff, stop it.
Well, so what's important is that there's no punishments laid out in this. So they're guidelines and they're rules, but if you violate them, it's not like they're going to call ball one on you if you step out of the box and spit. So at least as I'm reading it now. But you file under more trouble than it's worth. Then, you know, file under, if a baseball player can't go out to left field and spit, then, you know, maybe you shouldn't be playing.
Like, exactly.
You know, but anyway, did you read this Jeff Passan thing, A Day in the Life of a Baseball Player, what it could look like this year? Let me just give you some highlights. All right, day in the life of a baseball player. Wake up. Grab the thermometer that is issued to every player in MLB and take your temperature. Just make sure you do it before eating, drinking, or exercising. Is that true, Maz? You got to take your temperature. And, of course, this is the very second he decides to get up out of his chair. He's been home for 6 weeks every day, 4 hours a day. And the first time I go to him to ask him a question, he's out of the chair. But so again, take it before eating, drinking, or exercising. I didn't know you had to take your temperature before eating or drinking. Anyway, if it's over 100 degrees, self-isolate, call the team physician, and get ready to take a rapid response COVID test. If not, you can then go to the stadium. If you're on the road, it can be any one of the 6 bus trips to the ballpark instead of the typical early or late team bus options. Don't forget to open the windows. If you're at home, go to the home stadium. Go to the entrance that can be used only by 101 specifically designated people. Put on a mask. So all players have to wear masks when they enter the stadium, Murray. They can take it off when they go on the field. But if you're in the stadium, in the clubhouses, in the concourses, you have to have your mask on. All right, so you put on your mask. You walk into the stadium. Maybe even be in uniform already. Okay, we've already mentioned no showering after games. They may want you dressing at home and showing up in your uniform. All right, when you get in the stadium, get your temperature taken again. If it's still below 100, you're allowed in the restricted areas, meaning the field, the training room, the weight room, the clubhouse, or perhaps, Murray, the auxiliary clubhouse, because social distancing is important, and 6 feet will separate all lockers, and some locker rooms just aren't big enough to handle that many people and that much space between them, so the team needs to build another. That's going to be the Red Sox for sure. They're going to have an auxiliary locker because their locker room's tiny. They can't fit all 25, 30 guys down there with 6 feet apart.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be problematic in older stadiums for sure.
So this is even before you get to the stadium. Passon writes, this might be your day for a coronavirus test since there will be a few a week. So get ready. So get that saliva ready, he says. Also could be a monthly blood test for the antibodies. Since you can't use hot tubs, cold tubs, saunas, steam rooms, or the chirotherapy, there's no excuse not to get to the 4:30 hitters meeting on time. Just check whether it's on the iPad or outside, because indoor in-person meetings don't exist anymore. At least you can take off your mask on the field, he writes. You'll be out there plenty. It may look a little odd. No water or sports drink jugs in the dugout. You hear that one? So no water or Gatorade in the dugout.
That's an easy enough fix. You have individual bottles.
Okay. No sunflower seeds or dip. Remember, you can't spit or high five or dap or hug. Now he says it's game time. There is no lineup card exchange. Those were sent in via app. I'm sure that gets Maz excited. I'm sure he's got his lineup card app all set and downloaded.
I like it.
The manager is standing along the railing. He's not allowed to be on the steps. The manager's not allowed to be on the steps. He has to be along the railing?
What are we doing?
Well, I'll tell you what. He says, I'm not totally against distancing the managers because a lot of these guys are older. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, other coaches are spread out, 6 feet from one another, of course. The rest of the bench is sparsely populated. Only players likely to enter the game can be in the dugout. The rest are in the stands. The closest you can sit to anyone is with 4 empty seats between you and 2 empty rows behind you. They even spelled this out, Maz.
So look, none of this stuff bothers me. I don't mind the stuff off the field. You know, if people have to sit far apart from one another, and we had heard the thing about the players being in the stands anyway, none of that bothers me. I don't mind any of that. The stuff that I mind is the stuff on the field that is typically a part of the game that they're trying to change. That I don't like.
Okay, here now I get some of the game stuff. Again, day in the life of a baseball player. When the pitcher needs some grip, he better not lick his fingers. He has a personal rosin bag for that. The hitter who needs some tack on his own, pine tar rag, personal pine tar rag as well. Oh, and that ball that went into left field, get rid of it. If it's in play and touched by multiple players, it's no longer good. If you're playing, you're supposed to wash your hands or sanitize them every half inning. The bullpen phone gets used, disinfect it. The dugout phone rings, disinfect it. He says the game ends. There's no buffet, so the clubhouse attendant grabs you a pre-packaged meal. Don't bother with a cash tip. They will now take Venmo and PayPal. Thanks. If you want to eat with teammates, social distancing rules still apply. You could wait until you get back to the hotel and hit the private dining area or order room service. But don't even think about going out to dinner. You're not allowed to leave the hotel without approval, period. So go back to your room, which looks exactly as it did when you left, because housekeeping is not allowed to enter. And you call it a day. So no housekeeping, Maz.
So, look, that one feels excessive to me. Again, like I sort of look at this thing about being in the bubble and going on road trips. Like, I would hope that MLB would take it into, you know, take it into account ahead of time. We're going to be in this hotel. If you're going to enter the room and sterilize it, you got to clean it. Here's who, you know, your people have to be tested and this sort of thing. Now, look, if they're eliminating that variable because they don't trust the hotels, and then okay, fine. I get it. You know, better that than the alternative. So, but even things like the restaurant in the, you know, can they just set aside a place to eat in the hotel for just the players? Well, can't they control some of that stuff?
That's absolutely what they said. You know, if you don't want to hit the private dining area in the hotel, is what I read. So
Okay. Apparently
there is something accounted for there, but you can't, you know, go out to eat together, and you can't take Ubers and you can't take cabs. And, well, so I'm with you. It's the game stuff that I care about. This other stuff, if you need to just sign off on it to yes, the public health official and make him feel okay, then just do it. You want us to stand apart on the national anthem? No problem. Fine. You want us to sit in the stands versus the dugout? Not an issue. I'll walk up two steps and sit on the, no problem. You want me to wear a mask when I enter the stadium? That's annoying, but fine. Whatever. If it gets you to sign off on the thing, we get back to playing ball and I can get back to making my contract, fine, I'll wear the stinking mask. Big deal. Like, I don't get the people who fight the mask thing. If it gets the scientists and the public health officials to allow you to open the door and resume business, just put on the effing mask. Doesn't take anything.
I mean, because, Mike, a lot of the other stuff is stuff that we're trying to adhere to in day-to-day society anyway. And so, you know, whether it's in a restaurant or in an Uber or a cab,
right,
or, you know, whatever, we're all trying to honor these new rules as they are. The game, you can't play the game, even a non-contact sport, without coming into some contact with the ball, or you're in the general vicinity of another player or person. It's just, there's some stuff that is not avoidable.
Right, so, but
right,
like,
it's like you're encouraging phantom tags all of a sudden. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if you saw some of those and you're like, wait a minute, that guy didn't even hit that guy, and he gets called out.
Let the first baseman hold him on first base for crying out loud. Let the second baseman run in behind the runner at second base for a pickoff play. Like, please, and if the ball goes to left, would you not just be so hyper, you know, sensitive of how many guys touched it? I'm with you on that. But all this other stuff, you don't want me to shower at the stadium? Fine. Fine. Have the bus ready. I'll jump on the bus. You'll drive into the hotel. I'll take a shower. Fine. Like, just yes them to death on that stuff, because it's really not worth fighting over. And if it gets the public health official to say go ahead, then that's what you're looking for. But, you know, the stuff on the field, there is some – I'll just say it again. If you can't let a baseball player spit, I don't know if the baseball player can play baseball, because it's that ingrained. The next thing you say is, what, tell him to stop scratching his cup and stop adjusting his jockstrap? You won't have a game. They won't be able to see straight. They won't be able to throw a ball or swing a bat. You'll climb so far in their heads if they can't grab their crotch and spit. What will they have left?
Dude, I have a hard time watching the game without putting my hand on my crotch.
Okay, so there's a reset on MLB. Your thoughts right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Mez.
Wow.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
And this will require, among many changes, a significant shift in how players actually interact with each other physically. What has been the reaction to that part of that proposal from around baseball?
Baseball players are trying to wrap their heads around it, honestly. I think they were expecting something like this. And this is a 67-page document that essentially says baseball as we know it is going to change. Now, it's going to change in really small ways sometimes, Hannah. You're not allowed to spit. You're not allowed to have sunflower seeds on the field. One thing that got a really visceral reaction was the point that we will discourage players from showering after the game. That didn't go over well, and the MLBPA, as well as Major League Baseball executives, are going to have their chance to voice some of those concerns, and it can be everything as simple as, hey, we want to take a shower after the game, to, hey, it doesn't exactly say what happens to me if I test positive on the road. You're just going to, like, leave me in that city? How am I going to get back to my family? How am I going to get back to where I'm going? So these are the things that in the coming days, Hannah, in addition to the economic elements, are going to be really important to figure out if Major League Baseball and the players do ultimately want to get back on the field this year.
Yeah, there's Jeff Passan on the MLB stuff. We continue with your calls on a re-entry Monday. JJ in the car. Go ahead, JJ.
How's it going, guys? Baseball is the most socially distanced game out of the four major sports. I don't even want to begin to think about what the proposals for the MLB, the NBA, NFL, NHL. It's ridiculous. And then all these tedious guys, I mean, your David Prices of the world, telling them they can't spit. I mean, you watch him on the mound, it takes him 25 seconds. He's touching his shoulder. He takes three little baby steps and then he pitches. He's going to be hitting the screen. He's a nutcase. And now you're taking it out of his daily routines. He's going to get a temperature in the morning. He's got to take a certain bus. I mean, the dude's a nutcase to start. It just seems such a stretch for these guys to...
Well, the spitting especially, I'm just going to cut you off. Like, what? So MLB issues you a thermometer. Wake up, take a temperature. Like, that really shouldn't be that big of a deal. And just get on one of the buses. Like, there used to be two. Now there's going to be six. That's better. You get more tailored the time that you need. So that's not it. But for David Price not be able to spit or finger himself, if I could say that, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, of course.
He won't be able to find the freaking plate.
My comfort is paramount to my success. Oh, he'll be out of his mind. And a lot of these guys that are all these fidgets, you know, they wouldn't be able to. They're not going to be able to function.
Well, so look, the caller made two good points. The first of which is, if this is what it is for baseball, what are you doing basketball? Like, a guy steals a pass and you have to stop play to change the ball?
Right, exactly.
Like, what are we being? See, this is why I think that this stuff borders on the stupid. So in basketball, we're going to allow, you know, a ball to get batted around and someone to steal it and go the other way. But in baseball, you can't take it out of your glove and throw it to the second baseman? Like, you know, it's just stupid. The ball thing is stupid in baseball. I'm sorry. That's dumb. That's just a dumb rule. The sport is played with a ball. Multiple people are going to touch it. Dumb. It's just stupid. You're going to have to live with that one. And then, as it pertains to Price, and Mike, I know you made this point in the email exchange. David Price doesn't want to throw the ball inside of 30 seconds. You're going to get him to stop hyperventilating, breathing all over his glove and the ball, and on the mound, and get him to change his habits, let alone stop spitting and everything else. No chance. He'll have a nervous breakdown.
No shot. Bill and Webster on the Celtics here on the Reentry Monday. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, hi. I'm just tired of hearing you downplay. I'm one of these old farts, and I'm tired of hearing you downplay the Celtics in the 50s and 60s.
Fake titles.
The Lakers won their first four championships in Minneapolis, and the Celtics beat the Lakers 7 out of 9 times in the 60s and late 50s to win their championships. So they were playing real teams. They were playing Elgin Baylor. They were playing Jerry West. They were playing Wilt Chamberlain to get to the finals. They were real players.
No, I enjoyed you beating in 1959 the Syracuse Nationals.
In 59 we beat the Lakers.
Well, I'm just giving you the standings. You were the first in the Eastern Conference. You did get past the Knicks. Congratulations. But the Syracuse Nationals were third. The Western Division, who are the Western Division champions that year? Do you remember?
The Lakers, who we beat.
St. Louis Hawks. Nope, St. Louis Hawks.
Okay, no, you're right. In 50, all right. But we beat them during the 60s in 59, we beat the Lakers 7 out of 9 times. We beat Wilt Chamberlain 4 out of 5 times.
Bill, don't forget
the Eastern Finals.
Bill, don't forget
they were real teams.
Don't forget the
They all had Hall of Famers.
Yeah, the 6'4" center with the buzz cut and belt. Don't forget the Cincinnati Royals or the I think the St. Louis Hawks were the Tri-City Riverhawks. They were the Milwaukee Hawks for a little bit. And then I think they ultimately ended up in Atlanta. But this is back in the days when they had just gotten out of the Tri-Cities. What are the Tri-Cities, Murray? Do you know?
Oh, it's like
it's Des Moines, isn't it? Des Moines? Congratulations. One of those banners up there, a couple of those banners, was by you getting past Des Moines. Congratulations. Woo!
St. Louis, the Hawks were a good team that year, though.
Tony and Stoneham. Hi, Tony.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, Maz, I got to tell you something. I don't have an issue with you. We had an issue on one person, whoever it was, and I don't even remember what the argument was about. Do you remember?
No, but you don't like me, Tony, so that's okay.
I love you, Tony. You're fellow Paisan. Anyway, you know, this baseball thing is going to be absolutely nuts. I mean, what are you going to do with a double play ball? And I mean, it's just crazy what they're doing. I can understand the spitting, but again, as you said, it's part of baseball. How do you stop it?
Tony.
I think they're going way overboard.
Tony, no around the horn. Do you know why around the horn started in the first place?
No, why?
Okay, this is what I've always been led to believe. And we can get Buck or Doris Kearns or someone on, Ken Burns on the line, and they could tell me. But I've always been led to believe that this is the irony of ironies, is that around the horn first started specifically so the players could rub their hands on spit. It was the year the spitball was outlawed. You're no longer the spitball used to be legal. And there was one year they outlawed the spitball, but all the pitchers were still spitting on the ball because that's how they pitched. So they would still spit on the ball. And so before the umpire could grab the ball, hey, throw it to third, throw it to second, throw it to first, throw it around the diamond. You'd play keep away from the umpire and you'd toss it around the diamond so he wouldn't found out. And everyone would rub the ball and you'd rub the spit off the ball. So there you go, Maz. There's a little baseball trivia for you.
So I thought you were going to tell me that every guy spit on the ball so the umpire wouldn't know whose saliva it was, like a firing squad.
it was something to do with that. It was the year the spitball was outlawed, and so they played keep away from the umpire so he couldn't find you doctoring the ball. That's that.
Makes sense to me.
Okay. Yep. That's
just another way to hide cheating.
Here's Mike in Nashua. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, yeah. So I've been listening to you guys pretty much since you came on the air, and I'm troubled lately because I find myself agreeing with you.
Yeah.
These rules are ridiculous. And here's my point. If I'm a ball player, what you tell me is it's not safe. I'm supposed to, like, say I'm the catcher. I'm going to block the plate on a close play, collide with a guy, maybe draw some blood. But if the ball gets touched by three players, you're going to throw it out? I mean,
Mike,
either it's safe or it's not.
Mike, you are absolutely right, Maz. I can see you nodding as well. It's like all those the minutiae and the overregulation of it is just screaming out, this isn't safe.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the best way to put it. It's an excellent point that if you're going to put in all these restrictions and they're going to be this strict, it's not safe to play. I mean, if that's what you really believe, it's not safe to play. Now, I happen to believe that the whole touching of the ball thing is just way over the line. I mean, if all of a sudden a team gets infected because they didn't wipe down a baseball, then to me, the players weren't doing something else right. They were putting their hands to their face or they weren't sanitizing between innings. To me, that's what the rule should be. Okay, keep your hands away from your face, and you know, obviously that includes your eyes. I'm not just talking about, you know, putting your hands in your mouth. Don't rub your eyes. Don't do any of that. When you get back to the dugout, sanitize every half inning. And if then if we find that guys are still getting it, well, then you shut it down. They can't play.
So, but to me, like, this is a bigger picture topic. It's like society in general. And I've been saying this for weeks. It's all well and good to say this, the economy's open up the businesses. That's not. If people don't feel safe going out, it's not going to matter whether the doors are open or not. They're not going to go in. So there has to be this big, you know, movement and push, coordinated push, to let people know it's okay. It's okay. It's safe to go. Unless it's not, then, you know, then it's not. But as long as it is, then the push should be, it's okay to go out, and here's why. Not just, doors are open, let's go. Well, that ain't going to work. People have to feel safe in the first place. And, you know, it's an interesting way to look at it with this baseball as well. So we'll continue with your thoughts on this. Everything from a reentry Monday, the NHL inching their way back with a plan that I really like. We hit on that earlier, so we can do that. We do want to get to the Last Dance, the Jordan documentary, which concluded last night on ESPN. We have thoughts on that, and we'll get to them right after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass.
Whee!
It's way more than just a sports talk radio show.
This truly is the apocalypse.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I haven't spent much time on this today here on a Reentry Monday brought to you by East Boston Savings Bank. The conclusion of the Last Dance documentary last night on ESPN. Maz Murray, who wants to go first?
Murray.
Overall, like, it was a good viewing experience. I thought it was a bit bloated. I kind of tapped out after last week's episodes, 7 and 8. I thought they were too puffy at that point. It's like, well, we're really not going to dive that deep into Jordan's gambling and that kind of thing. It was ultimately one big puff piece. But they brought me back because you got great highlights. And I remembered how awesome that series was, the Eastern Conference Finals between the Bulls and the Pacers, and how neck and neck that was. So it was great to relive that. It was great to relive the 90s as a whole, my favorite of all the decades, the best of the decades in my lifetime. So overall, I liked it. And I'm a Jordan guy. So, I don't think it's the greatest documentary ever made, which a lot of people are making it out to be. And I thought that the way that it jumped was annoying at times. But overall, it was good. It was great to learn all that kind of stuff about Steve Kerr and his father. I didn't know that, and his story was really interesting. I thought Scottie Pippen looked really bad throughout it, but Game 6 in Utah, he gave everything when he could barely move. He's got the bad back, so he kind of bounced back a little bit there to me. But overall, I don't think it was a good look for Pippen in this thing. It was good. It was good, not great.
Look, I would say that, Jordan said that one of his concerns was that he would not come off in a good light by the end of it. And I happen to agree. I actually think a little bit less of Jordan, maybe a lot less, as a human being than I did going in. As a player, I know what he was. He's the best I've ever seen. And I think the gap between Jordan and everybody else is huge. And I think the one thing that Jordan doesn't get a lot enough credit for is his defense. He was a great defensive player. And so they pumped the crap out of Pippen on the defensive end. Jordan had a knack for also coming up with big defensive plays. So I just, from that standpoint, I don't think they sold his ability enough. I just think he really came off as kind of an a-hole. And I have less respect for him as a human being than I did going into this thing. And I know what the Bulls were, and I know competitively what they were and all that, and certainly know what Jordan was. I thought the documentary was too long. The longer it went on, the more I found it just being the same stuff over and over and over again with a couple of new angles sprinkled in, whether it's Steve Kerr or whoever else. But to me, it was repetitive. And just as a total aside, and this has nothing to do with the Bulls, I forgot how overrated I thought Karl Malone was. He is, to me, one of the most overrated players in the history of the league. And so, look, he was good. I'm not telling you he sucked. He was an all-star. He was all that. People talk about the mailman sometimes like he's one of the 10 greatest players of all time. And I just think that he was a big guy that had some skill. And when I say big, I mean big-bodied, broad. He was strong as an ox, and he was that rare guy built like that who could actually shoot 75% from the free throw line. But he didn't shoot 85%. He didn't have a long-range game. I can't stand Malone. I think he's one of the great frauds in the history of the league.
So, combining two of the things you just mentioned there, my favorite play from the whole Jordan documentary, and one of my favorite plays from his whole career, was the steal that preceded the final game-winning shot against Utah in Game 6. Like, that's the play that sort of gets me off. Like the just the instinctive game winning, like that play is what that again,
that sequence is
insane.
It's insane. I mean, it's the best capper too. I mean, I know he came back with the Wizards, but there's no better way to cap that guy's career than that 45 seconds on both ends.
Right. So that play did it for him, but it also speaks to Malone a little bit. It's like you let him strip you, and then you. And then you slink onto the Bulls bus. How'd you feel about that when you see that shot of him climbing on the bus after he just lost the NBA Finals? Like, I don't know. I mean, and you could sort of tell the Bulls were like, dude, what are you doing here?
Right.
Yeah, to me, that was Malone in a nutshell. I just always thought he was a poser. He was always the guy doing it for the cameras, like, oh, this will look good. This will be me. This will be me being gracious in defeat. That's how he wanted it to come off. And to me, there was always something missing with Malone. I was never a mailman guy. Never, never, never.
Okay, yeah, you had a typo in the email because you said Jordan initially in the email chain. I was like, what are you talking about? Especially after watching this and reliving it. But I'm with you on Malone. And just, you know, rank him against other power forwards that are on his level, or some people that are big fans of Malone would put ahead of these guys, like Dirk, Duncan, KG. I would take those three guys ahead of him every single time.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, again, Bird was the same size as Malone. Malone was 6'9". Bird wasn't as broad as Malone, but Bird blew the mailman out of the water. Please, not even in the same class.
So, I mean, it was well done. I watched it, most all of it. And I think he's the greatest player of all time. So, like, I don't, what I'm about to say, I don't want to take away from that. I'm just not into the whole idolatry business. I'm just not, you know. I just, it doesn't do anything for me like this day-long circle session on ESPN about, I think he's great. I think he's, here's why he's the great. He's the greatest because of this. Like, okay, I got it. Like, I can't. That just does nothing for me. Does nothing for me, especially because I think he is really I've said before, I think he's dirty, or, you know, like, he feels like he's kind of a degenerate to me right now, or, you know, and he certainly thinks sort of became that as a player. And if that's a little strong, that's a little strong. I feel like there's a whole other side to him that I am far more interested in. I would be way more interested in the unauthorized biography, in the unauthorized documentary that delved into his gambling problems and delved into all the dirt that I just think he's sort of accumulated in the second half of his career. I mean, I totally buy when he first came in that he didn't really drink and he, you know, worked harder than anyone else and was just completely dedicated and obsessed with the sport. And I think that's what he was when he came in. I mean, I do sort of believe that. I do know he gambled at North Carolina, and so I always know that he had the bug. But when he says, you know, because I thought it was an honest moment early on in the series when he said, when I first came into the league, I didn't drink at the time. And he made sure to say that because he's sitting next to the big glass of scotch and the cigar. But at the time, you know, when he first came into the league, you didn't see him with the cigar constantly hanging out of his mouth. And, you know, those fellas like Miller Lite, huh? They picked the right beer.
Yeah.
You know, they enjoy drinking after the game. Like, you saw that as it went on. But when it first started, I believe him. I don't think he was that guy. But I think that as he got into the NBA life, boy, did he embrace sort of the darker side to the NBA life. And I think there's a whole story there to be told that I am way more interested in. I am way more interested in the gambling issue, his relationship with David Stern, and what I think was still a de facto suspension those 2 years. I think so. I would love to hear that story, and even something as innocuous, I guess, as the story last night about the flu game at Utah in the NBA Finals, where he claims it was food poisoning from pizza. Now, I've heard people get food poisoning from a lot of things. Have you ever heard anyone getting food poisoning from pizza? And the obvious implication there is that he was poisoned, because the five guys, you know, there were five guys that showed up to deliver the pizza, and they're like, how come these five guys are delivering the pizza? Well, you never need five guys. That story had so many freaking holes in it, and I think was such an utter pile of bullcrap that it gets my back up, Murray. You're already laughing at it, but it was such bullcrap, I thought.
Oh, this was the one that was like, you're really going to try to sell this to us? Okay. Are you kidding me?
All right, so let's pick this up on the other side. Because, again, not that this makes him a horrible person or is that big of a story, but it's just sort of the way I'm wired. It's like, don't feed me this pile of bull. I'm not interested in the legend and the bullcrap. Okay, I'm much more interested in a documentary that tells me what was really going on that night, and then it's still, okay, you are hungover and you had a great game. Fine, just tell me what's really there. Tell me the actual story and not this piece of bullcrap about the rotten pizza. Like, this thing was a joke. We'll pick this up on the other side with your calls.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
never be left out of the conversation.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Felger.
Good God, man. Have some pride.
Mads.
The guy's psychotic.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
Stop it.
It's like 10, 10:30 at night. I'm hungry.
No room service. Michael gets hungry. So, all right, so we're calling all these different places. George and I are looking around. We find one pizza place open. One.
So he ordered a pizza. And when the pizza came, there was four or five guys outside the door.
Five guys delivering one pizza.
You know, it's very rare that you get five delivery guys from, you know, the pizza place to bring you your pizza.
And they're all trying to look in, and, you know, everybody knew his mind. So I take the pizza, I pay them, and I put this pizza down, and I said, I got a bad feeling about this.
I eat the pizza all by myself. Nobody else eats. Eat the pizza. I wake up about 2:30, throwing up left and right.
3 o'clock in the morning, I get a call. My roommate, man, come to the room right now. All right, I get into him. He's literally curled up in a ball, shaking. He goes, man, find a team doc now.
So it really wasn't a flu game. It was food poisoning.
So again, I don't want to make too big a deal of it because it's whatever.
I do.
But it's just such bullcrap.
I can debunk this thing in like a minute.
Go, do it.
First, the trainer is going to allow Michael Jordan to eat a pizza and not recommend, oh, I don't know, a grilled chicken wrap, Caesar salad with chicken, something high in protein. So red flag number one. So then five Mormons, Hiram, Porter, who else, they show up to deliver this thing. And then the trainer allows him to eat it after he said he had bad feelings about it. Red flag two. Then what kind of lunatic doesn't even say, hey, you guys want a slice? The pizza enters the room. Jordan, I know from watching this thing, but we knew anyway, inherently selfish, self-centered. But I refuse to believe he's that big of a complete a-hole not to offer up one slice. That's just common courtesy. So, you always offer up a slice. Have a slice, even if you don't mean it.
Can I stop you?
Yeah.
So there was a clip on ESPN from the director, the producer, who's from around here, by the way. He told the story. It didn't make the documentary, but the backstory is that Jordan didn't eat with his teammates because they didn't wait to order for him. They ordered, they ate. Jordan showed up late or didn't get to order, and so Jordan was hungry. He ordered the pizza, and he said, screw you, you don't get any, and he spat on the pizza to make sure none of his teammates would eat it. That's what the director said, or that's what he was told. Okay.
Well, so that's him trying to debunk people like me that don't buy this. And here's the one that really proves to me it's fake. So he wolfs down the thing by himself. Again, when the trainer didn't feel good about it, and you have five Mormons show up to deliver it, when you easily could have called the hotel and said, hey, Michael Jordan needs a steak. But he says there, yeah, there's no room service. At 10:30 at night, no room service. No shot. You're not staying at a hotel, a hostel. You're staying at a hotel chain.
Murray.
Any major hotel chain, Mike, is going to bend over backwards for a celebrity. If you just say, hey, Michael Jordan needs a steak and a baked potato, they're going to do it.
We saw the hotel. They showed us a hotel after the celebration.
With a piano in the thing.
Wait a minute. You're telling me they could deliver a piano, but they couldn't get Jordan some food? At 10:30 at night? Oh, it's such bullcrap.
It's such a crock.
Or
it's a lie. It's a lie.
They weren't at the hotel. They were running around. They were somewhere. Okay? And so, like, there's maybe grains of truth in that story because they're probably all running around, you know, getting their bomb on, and Jordan wanted some late-night food, and maybe there's some little, you know, some tie in there some way. But first of all, you gave the pizza shop Jordan's name. Yeah, this is Michael Jordan's pizza. So that's the five guys show up because they know it's Jordan. How would they know it's Jordan? Like, what are you? Like, that's be the first celebrity in the history of celebrities to give your real name. Like, you're in an opposing city for the championship game. Yeah, this is Tom Brady on the line. I'd like a large hoagie, please. Yeah. That Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Yeah, TB12. Yep. Extra sauce. Thanks. All right. Yeah, room 605. Like, they gave the pizza shop Jordan's real name and room. It's bullcrap.
Of course it's bullcrap.
It's total bullcrap. And I know it's bullcrap because if you were paying attention to our show, we played you this cut a couple weeks ago. This is Jalen Rose, who I don't think repeated this story today because today all ESPN is doing is servicing Michael Jordan, if you know what I mean. It's one big service session, which I just have no use for. The sacred cowism, the idolatry, like, I'm just not into it. I'm a little more into just actually what happened. And then we can have fun and judge what really happened. Because a couple weeks ago, before we had this massive session at ESPN, Jalen Rose told you the scuttlebutt among NBA players at the time with the flu game. Here's Jalen Rose just not 2 weeks ago.
But you know what made him an actual icon? That he didn't go to bed at 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And we all knew it. Okay, that's just one story. What about the times that he would be in the casino? Okay, win a stogie, win, lose, or draw, and still know he had a game the next day or the same day and come out and do work. And I'm not the person to make any allegations, but the Utah flu game, there's been an urban legend that he was more than sick during that game. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay, so, like, it was already out there that it wasn't the flu. It's like, so, now they got to spin this whole thing, and it's like, I'm just not buying that. Like, why don't we just stick to how great he was on the floor, and boy, he was great, and how cutthroat he was as a competitor. Boy, was he a tough SOB. Like, so let's just stick to the facts. And it was authorized, meaning Jordan had final cut, he had final say, and that's what it turned into. And so that's just not for me personally. I'm a little bit more into the real story. Go ahead.
You don't have to Disney-fy the thing by saying, "Oh no, it was just food poisoning." Like, no, it wasn't. It's just such a crock.
Oh, it's a complete lie. The only thing that surprised me is they didn't get the Marshall Hook lookalike to put it in his book, for crying out loud. You get a look at that guy. Tell me that guy didn't look just like Marshall Hook.
I can't remember
the Rare Air author.
Yeah, the guy who wrote the book. And tell you,
oh, that guy.
Just
yeah,
like
yeah, 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 yeah. Oh no. The big character witnesses, you know, the big guys that tell you who Michael Jordan really was were Ahmad Rashad and that Bobo, the Marshall Hook there, who did his book or his whatever, like a bunch of hangers on. So please, crying out loud, a bad pizza.
Oh, oh God, he was plastered, please. That sounds like the story I told at the 96 All-Star game.
Oh, so no question. It's like the first, you know, six times I got drunk, these excuses you tell your parents. Spicy sausages, food poisoning, I ate something wrong. Yeah, like, give me a break.
Yeah, I was at the media party.
Mike and Woburn, you have a thought?
Oh, I think you guys are right. You basically hit it on the head. It was too long, 10 episodes too long. Probably should have been 8. I guess they did stretch it out.
Yes, they did.
When Corona hit because ESPN needed extra programming or something.
Yes.
They stretched it out. Biggest losers on here from this, Jerry Krause. They basically dug up his body and buried him every episode.
Yes.
Isaiah Thomas. Phil Jackson, who basically comes off as not so much a coach, but a therapist for the rest of the team after Michael abuses them. And pizza. The biggest loser here. I hate to see what the business is at Brigham Young's House of Pizza this morning.
Yeah. Cut you off there. Brigham Young's House of Pizza. I thought Jackson actually came off well.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I thought clearly Jordan's affection for Jackson came out during the series. Jackson was regarded as this, you know, this Zen master. This is how we got the whole, you know, the whole image, for crying out loud, was because Jordan perpetuated it.
But by the way, Maz, and I know you've been in the past sort of down on Jackson, like overrated, and you should after this have a little bit more appreciation for what his gift was. And that Bulls team was a handful. You know, never mind Jordan's ego, but just, you know, Dennis Rodman, you know, never mind flying off to Vegas in the middle of the season. How about flying off to the wrestling event in the middle of the Eastern Conference Finals? Like,
right.
So he could hit Diamond Dallas Page with a chair.
Right. So Rodman's a handful. I'm sorry. Scottie Pippen's a puss. Scottie Pippen's a puss. And I do not think, you know, even in that last game, I felt like the whole documentary, Pippen was either coming off the floor hurt in big games or missing free throws. Like, I feel like Pippen looked worse in this thing, and Jordan made him look so. So anyway, Pippen was soft. Rodman was absolutely out of his mind. Horace Grant was kind of a bitch or back and forth with Jordan, or they had their problems. Jordan's punching Steve Kerr in the face. He's got Tony Kukoc, who they hated, but, you know, was like, I think you should look back on Jackson and say, you know what? You underestimated the skill it took to keep those guys together and performing and showing up at least enough to win those championships. He deserves credit, I think, Maz.
So look, again, I will tell you that the Jackson with the Bulls, I agree. I think that he did a good job there. Phil Jackson, to me, became way too much to take when he went to L.A. But no doubt, that team was a lot to handle. I'm just telling you that overall, he absolutely came out looking good. And I thought Mike and Woburn was going to say Pippen. I thought Pippen took a beating.
Me too.
In this thing.
Me
like,
too.
Jerry Krause is easy. That's shooting fish in a barrel. In fact, I think that that one reached the point of, what I would call gluttony on the part of Jordan. Do you have to beat him up that bad? Like, to me, this makes Jordan look bad. That Jerry Krause is the guy you have to beat up episode in, episode out. That's the guy, just like you're going to beat up on Tony Kukoc in the Olympics. What? You couldn't pick a better challenger, a better threat, a bigger threat than that guy? Come on. Jerry Krause was easy to kick the crap out of. He was a nerd.
Oh, but Pippen, it's like, big game, I've got a headache. Big game, I've got a bad back. Pippen at the line to shoot two at the end against him, he misses them both. It's like they make sure to put all that in there. And, Pippen, would you do it again? I'd probably do the same thing, not take the final shot.
Right,
and
bitching about the contract,
like,
all of it.
Oh, my God. I thought he came off horribly. And, again, Jordan was the final say, the final director. He controlled the content. So Jordan made sure that we had that view of Pippen. Just remember that. One of the best takes on the whole thing I heard from Beadle today, I want to give proper credit because I know they get a little, squirrely if we don't give proper credit. Beadle made a brilliant point. On the Zolak and Bertrand show, 10-2, and I want to give him full credit for it, and I want to repeat it because I thought it was one of the best things I've heard about the whole, the whole breakup of the dynasty. And so I'll give you that. We'll take more of your calls, I promise, right to him after Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.